Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The cover of Michelle Zauner's first album, Psychopomp, the first she released under the stage name Japanese Breakfast, features a picture of her mother as a young woman in Korea. In it, Michelle's mom is hanging out with a friend, and the image catches her kind of reaching out like she's about to say something or maybe grab the camera. Michelle chose that image for the cover as an homage to her mom, who died of stage 4 cancer in 2014 when Michelle was 25. Of course, Michelle dealt with the grief of losing a parent, but also mourned the loss of a connection to her Korean identity. Michelle, whose dad is white, was raised in Oregon, and her father grieved away in a way that didn't preserve the family memories or make them closer at all. In 2018, Michelle wrote about her experience in a New Yorker essay titled Crying in H Mart. H Mart is a Korean grocery chain. And in the piece, Michelle writes, H Mart is freedom from the single aisle ethnic section in regular grocery stores. They don't prop Goya beans next to bottles of sriracha here. Instead, you'll likely find me crying by the banchan refrigerators, remembering the taste of my mom's soy sauce eggs and cold radish soup, or in the freezer section, holding a stack of dumpling skins, thinking of all the hours that mom and I spent at the kitchen table folding minced pork and chives into the thin dough. Sobbing near the dry goods, asking myself, am I even Korean anymore if there's no one left in my life to call and ask which brand of seaweed we used to buy? That essay resonated deeply with so many readers who had lost someone or who were feeling adrift in their own identity. Now Michelle has expanded that essay into an entire memoir, also called Crying in H Mart, and it is now a New York Times bestseller. And Michelle, as Japanese Breakfast, has a new album coming out in June, and that's titled Jubilee. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you have so much going on. That's kind of exciting, especially after the past year, right?
Yeah, it's been a past year where I haven't done much of anything. So, usually we would be on tour as a band, and since that's been off for over a year now, it's nice to get to talk to other people about the things that I've made.
The book started with this essay from The New Yorker. I know a lot of people read it. Writing a whole memoir is an entirely different beast. When did you feel you were ready? What made you feel like you were ready to take on a project and to write about your mom?
It was a slow process that sort of came in stages. I feel like people aren't kidding when they say there's really no skipping steps when it comes to writing a book, sort of similar to grief. It's going to take its own time and toll on you. But it started in maybe 2015. I wrote a piece for Glamour magazine called Love, Loss, and Kimchi. And that was sort of just a cute essay about this woman, Mang Chi, a Korean YouTube blogger, who I was learning how to cook. And that was the sort of beginning moment when I felt like there's so much of a storm, such a whirlwind. And it took about 5 years on and off to write.
You know what, Michelle? It's really interesting. Every fourth word line, you're going out. So I don't know if you're moving. This is live radio. So if you're moving, if you could hold still, because we're losing some of what you said, and it's all really important. Manchi's great. We've actually had her on the show. She is so effervescent and it just makes you excited about the idea of cooking. When did you turn to her videos?
I took videos shortly after my mom passed away. I think maybe the first time I watched her video was after my mother's funeral, when I made Tanjungjige for my aunt and my cousin who were visiting for her funeral, because I just wanted them to have something that reminded them of home, to bring them comfort. And from there I made her pine nut porridge recipe, and I was just kind of hooked from then on.
My guest is Michelle Zauner. The name of the book is Crying in H Mart. For those people who've never been to an H Mart before, would you mind describing it for us and why it just feels like such a good place for you?
Yeah,
I guess it just became a refuge, you know. A big part of it was that I, you know, was so sort of traumatized by the experience of caretaking for my mother. It was really difficult to remember her before she got sick. And so going to H Mart and seeing the sort of ingredients she used to cook with and remembering dishes we used to share together kind of helped me remember my mother before illness entered our lives.
Michelle, would you read a little bit from the book? It's a selection about your mother's love and her love of food.
I would love to. This is from the second chapter. It's called Save Your Tears. What I never seem to forget is what my mother ate. She was a woman of many usuals. Half a patty melt on rye with a side of steak fries to share at the Terrace Cafe after a day of shopping. An unsweetened iced tea with half a packet of Splenda, which she would insist she'd never use on anything else. Minestrone she'd order steamy hot, not steaming hot, with extra broth from the Olive Garden. On special occasions, half a dozen oysters on the half shell with champagne mignonette and steamy hot French onion soup from Jake's in Portland. She was maybe the only person in the world who'd request steamy hot fries from a McDonald's drive-thru in earnest. Jampong, spicy seafood noodle soup with extra vegetables from Cafe Seoul, which she always called Seoul Cafe, transposing the syntax of her native tongue. She loved roasted chestnuts in the winter, though they gave her horrible gas. She liked salted peanuts with light beer. She drank two glasses of Chardonnay almost every day, but would get sick if she had a third. She ate spicy pickled peppers with pizza. At Mexican restaurants, she ordered finely chopped jalapenos on the side. She ordered dressings on the side. She hated cilantro, avocados, and bell peppers. She was allergic to celery. She rarely ate sweets with the exception of the occasional pint of strawberry Haagen-Dazs, a bag of tangerine jelly beans, one or two seized chocolate truffles around Christmas time, and a blueberry cheesecake on her birthday. She rarely snacked or took breakfast. She had a salty hand. I remember these things clearly because that was how my mother loved you, not through white lies and constant verbal affirmation, but in subtle observations of what brought you joy, pocketed away to make you feel comforted and cared for without even realizing it. She remembered if you liked your stews with extra broth, if you were sensitive to spice, if you hated tomatoes, if you didn't eat seafood, if you had a large appetite. She remembered which banchan side dish you emptied first so the next time you were over, it'd be set with a heaping double portion, served alongside the various other preferences that made you, you.
My guest is Michelle Zoner. The name of her book is Crying in H Mart. What's something that, as you were writing the book and you were really thinking about your childhood, that you appreciate about the way your parents raised you?
I realized that my parents raised me with a voracious appetite, not just for food, but for life experience, I think. And, you know, my mom, for instance, never made me finish the things on my plate, but she always, one of her rules was I had to try everything once. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, made me a very adventurous eater and person in general. I was raised without much fear for the unknown.
When you're, as you get older and you start thinking about your parents, you start to recognize your parents in yourself and then things that you do or say or the way you think about something. What was a way you discovered, wow, I really am like my mom?
I think that especially once I got married, I realized that I love people in my life very similar to the way that she taught me how to love. I always felt like I related to my father so much more because we're both these very impatient, hard on the sleeve type of people. And my mom was a little bit more stoic and patient and withholding. And so I felt like I wasn't much like her. But as I grow older, I realize there's quite a bit that I take from her. And I really love that I love people in the same way that she loved me, I think.
Your mom was born and raised in Korea and your parents met there in the 80s and got married after only a few months. What do you think drew them together?
I think my father's persistence brought them together. My dad, the lore has it that my dad asked my mom out on a date every day for a month before she finally agreed to it. And actually, my mom's mother was a big fan of my dad. She was a strong advocate for him, and my mom was sort of uncertain about getting married, and I think was a little bit more of a you know, just wasn't in a place in her life where she was sure of much of anything. And my grandmother gave her the push to go for it, I think.
In the course of writing the book, and also in the course of your childhood, you are very honest about some things that happened, which are really tough. And, you know, how you stumbled on a family computer and discovered that your dad had been having extramarital affairs, and it's something you never told your mother about. Your mother, you and your mom are in this huge fight in one part of the book, and it's actually a little bit physical. And she screams in anger and says, "I had an abortion after you because you were such a terrible child." How did you come to terms? What were you thinking about when you decided to write this book to include those kinds of really, really personal moments and tough moments?
I think that those really personal and tough moments are what make sense of the way that people treat each other. You know, I think that in the beginning drafts, like, it was, I think I needed to go there to get the extent of how awful I had been and what ugly parts we brought out in each other in my teenage years, in order to strengthen how important and moving it was for my mother and I to come back together. For me, including the part where she revealed she had an abortion, was my mom at the brink of her limit of what mm-hmm. I had pushed her to as a teenager, and how awful I had been. And it was such an ugly thing to say, but I had said so many ugly things to her that we had hit that point. And it was important for me to share the sort of height of that in order to express how important it felt for us to come together and how sort of fraught our relationship was during this time I lived there as a caretaker, and how meaningful it was for us to be able to come back together. For my father, you know, there was a lot of anger and resentment I think I had towards him and frustration with him, because I think a lot of the times when people are working together as sort of caretakers for someone that you love, one person tends to check out and one person tends to kind of shoulder a lot of the responsibility. And I found that with a lot of people I've talked to about caretaking, is that that's a pretty common occurrence. And I think that I needed to share this really private piece of information in order to express how complicated my relationship with my dad already was, and how, you know, complicated my parents' relationship already was. And I felt like there was a time in which there was a draft in which I hadn't shared that. Hmm. And things didn't really make sense unless I included that detail.
The name of the memoir is Crying in H Mart. It's by Michelle Zahner. Once you come home and you want to assume this role of caretaker, was that just, I kind of got it from the book, but was that immediate that you were going to do that? Because to your point, some people, it's not immediate. It's a little too scary. It's a little too real.
I think that it was a pretty immediate understanding, at least on my part, mm-hmm. that I would have to be there. One of the reasons is because my mother's younger sister, Eunmi, had died of colon cancer 2 years before. And so it was a real lightning striking twice type of situation. We knew that our odds were not great, and that this could be a real, her dying was a real reality. And I knew that I wanted to spend as much time as possible with my mother before something like that could happen. Mm-hmm. The other thing was, you know, I'm an only child. And I think when you're an only child, you live in, you know, of course any child does, but you know that when this role reversal happens, it's just going to be you. And that is an ultimate responsibility for an only child. And so I sort of always knew that if something like this happened, that I would have to be there, but I certainly didn't know exactly what it entailed until I got there.
For a while, an old friend of your mother's comes to help, a woman named Kai, and she's very helpful. But you kind of sort of start to get a really sort of a, I don't know if it's a bad feeling, but you just, there's something that's not right to you. She becomes very sort of proprietary about the caretaking of your mom. What was not sitting right with you about this situation, about Kai being there all the time?
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange situation. I'm still very grateful for her and everything that she did for my family, but I think that this is another thing that happens with caretaking a lot, is that there's a certain type of possessiveness that occurs. And mm-hmm. so it was just a conflicting experience, because, you know, in some ways I was so grateful for her help, but then there was a feeling of getting edged out, and I knew that there was a very likely chance that these could be my last moments with my mother, and I could never have a private moment with her, with this woman living with us. And that was a real struggle to carve that out for us. And it wasn't something that she was cognizant of or felt was, I think, very important. You know, there were certain things that she like kind of delighted when my mom started falling back and turned her native tongue. And that was really difficult for my father and I to follow along and understand, and really put us in a panic. And it almost seemed like she took pleasure in that in a strange way. Mm-hmm. It was a really complicated situation. Mm-hmm. It was a number of things that she did that sort of made us feel kind of edged out in this way.
You write about your teenage years. Because during your teenage years, you sort of lose interest in school completely, but you obviously have this love of music comes to you. And you write, "Into the vacuum of my disinterest, music rushed to fill the void. It cracked a fissure, splintered a vein through the already precarious and widening rift between my mother and me. It would become a chasm that threatened to swallow us whole." Why did this love of music deepen a divide between you and your mom?
I think that my mother felt it was her duty to protect me from the unknown, and to become an artist or a musician is the ultimate unknown. And I think that she felt it would be a lifestyle that involved a lot of mental torment and rejection, and also real financial struggle. And she felt that I didn't understand the reality of that, and it was something for her to protect me from.
You write, you know, you obviously you have the success as Japanese Breakfast, and you write in the book, "Even at the height of my ambitions, I never imagined I'd be able to play a concert in my mother's native country, in the city where I was born. I wish my mother could see me, could be proud of the woman I'd become and the career I'd built, the realization of something she worried for so long would never happen. Conscious that the success we experienced revolved around her death, that the songs I sang memorialized her, I wish more than anything, and through all that contradiction, she could be there." How did you grapple with that fact that you had this success, but it also was sort of shadowed by her death?
Oh, it was so bittersweet. I mean, but it was really all that kept me afloat, I think. I felt, even though it was at complete odds with all of my spiritual and lack of religious belief, that in some ways, she was really looking out for me, because mm-hmm. I had struggled for so many years to find success as an artist, and it was only after she passed away that I suddenly came into it with such momentum. It was a very strange and serendipitous occurrence that it's almost impossible to feel like she didn't have a hand in it somehow.
Mm. You have a new album coming out in June called Jubilee. I want to listen to a little track from it, and then we can talk about it on the other side. A little bit of a track from it, I should say. This is called Be Sweet. That's from the forthcoming album Jubilee by Japanese Breakfast, a.k.a. Michelle Zauner. So Jubilee, I mean, that's an exciting and happy word and an exciting, happy idea, whereas your first two albums dealt with grief and sadness a lot. We've been talking about grief a lot from your book. What was your headspace when you were making this album?
I started writing this album in 2019. I was on a sort of break from the book. I had turned in the first draft in the summer of 2019, and the editor had it for 5 months. And I feel like I was able to really reach this sort of new chapter in my life where I was able to tackle a theme that was completely at the other end of the spectrum of human experience than grief and trauma and sadness and loss. Mm-hmm. And I feel like through unpacking so much of my grief over the course of the last 5 years with two records and then this book, I really wanted to write an album about joy. I felt like I was just at a place in my life where I was allowing myself to experiencing it, giving myself permission to have it in my life. And it felt like this really unexpected thing to come out with an album about joy, especially up against the sort of sad girl indie stereotype.
My guest is Michelle Zahner. The name of the book is Crying in H Mart. You know, so I really found your book interesting because, full disclosure, I did a very similar thing. I had, my parents had both gotten very sick, and I stopped working to become a caretaker, and they passed away. And then I wrote a book is partially about them. And it was interesting because and it was interesting because I was interviewing somebody about them, about something tangentially related to them, and it was a childhood friend. And they said, why are you so into this? And I was like, I don't know. She's like, because you miss them and you can be with them by being with their friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? I thought you might understand that.
Yes. Completely. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of detail about what was really traumatic about going through that experience with her. But I really padded it with memories I really wanted to relive. Some really beautiful detail that I hadn't gotten to sort of linger and revel in for a long time. And I think through wading through those type of memories, I was able to take this deeper dive into the harder stuff and really let it go. And I feel like I discovered so much about my mother through the writing of this book. And it was such a wonderful experience. And I feel so released from something in a sense in putting this out into the world.
What did you figure out about yourself? What sort of fell into place, like that last click of the Rubik's Cube, like, oh, that's why I'm like that. Or that's why that is why it is.
Yeah,
way it is.
Totally. I mean, I discovered a lot about my relationship with food. And I remembered a lot of, you know, sort of positive reinforcements that I got as a kid that makes a lot of sense as to why I would sort of turn to it as a therapeutic vehicle. You know, when I was younger, I felt, you know, while I struggled to be good or well-behaved, I could excel at being courageous, and I was often rewarded for eating well. And I think in a lot of ways, my mom felt a sense of pride or like, that's my kid, when I ate Korean food specifically and enjoyed it. So I think it made a lot of sense psychologically for me to kind of fall back into that and learn how to cook Korean food and sort of preserve this part of my culture in that way. And I think, yeah, I mean, I also learned how to forgive myself for a lot of the stuff that I really had a lot of guilt about for a long time, particularly the sort of rotten teenage years that I put my mom through. I think I was able to sort of look back at that and understand that it was a kind of misplaced creative energy. And I think that in writing through that, I was sort of able to forgive myself for a lot of the guilt that I had for putting my mom through that difficult time.
Well, the book will make you cry in a good way, in the best way. The name of the book is Crying in H Mart. Michelle Zahner has been my guest. Michelle, thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations on your success.
Thank you so much for having me.